Bhakti Siddhanta Sarshati Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki Jai. Ananta Koti Vaishnavrinda ki jai, Nama Charja Srila Haridas Thakur ki jai, Prem Sakaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Sadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gokovinath Sham Kundradha Kunigiri Govardhan ki jai, Vrindavan Tham ki jai, Navadipa Tham ki jai, Jagannath Puri ki jai, Ganga Mai ki jai, Jamana Mai ki jai, Tulsi Dev ki jai, Bhakti Dev ki jai, Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda ki jai, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees. Gaur Premanande. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya 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 Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Anchalila Chapter 1, Text 1. Well, is it 3 to 4 or is it 1 through 4? Yeah, I was told 1 through 4. For that matter, but probably we haven't read the chapter summary either, right? Srila Rupa Goswami's second meeting with the Lord. A summary of the first chapter is given by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his Amrita Prabhava Pasha as follows. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu returned to Jagannath Puri from Vrindavan, all his devotees from other parts of India, upon receiving the auspicious news, came to Purushottam Kshetra, or Jagannath Puri. Shivananda Sen took a dog with him and even paid fees for it to cross the river. One night, however, the dog could not get any food and therefore went directly to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at Jagannath Puri. The next day, when Shivananda and party reached Jagannath Puri, Shivananda saw the dog eating some coconut pulp offered to it by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. After this incident, the dog was liberated and went back home, back to Godhead. Meanwhile, Srila Rupa Goswami reached Bengal after returning from Vrindavan. Although he could not follow the Bengali devotees, after some time he also came to Jagannath Puri, where he stayed with Haridas Thakur. Srila Rupa Goswami composed an important verse beginning with the words Priya Soyam, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu relished it very much. One day, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Ramananda Roy, Sarva Bhuma Bhattacharya, and others went to the place of Haridas Thakur and heard some of the verses Rupa Goswami had composed for his books Lalita Madhava and Vidagdha Madhava. After examining the manuscripts of these two books, Ramananda Roy approved and appreciated them very much. After the period of Chaturmasya, all the devotees who had come from Bengal returned to their homes. Srila Rupa Goswami, however, remained at Jagannath Puri for some time. Text 1. Pangum langayate shailam mukam avartayech chutim yat kripa tamaham bande Krishna Chaitanam Ishanam. I offer my respectful obeisances to Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, by whose mercy even a lame man can cross over a mountain and a dumb man recite Vedic literatures. Vedic literature. Durga me pati main dhasya skalat pada gater muhu swakrpa yashti danena santa santvam balambanam. My path is very difficult. I am blind, and my feet are slipping again and again. Therefore, may the saints help me by granting me the stick of their mercy as my support. Sri Rup Sanatana Bhatta Raghunath, Sri Jiva Gopala Bhatta Dasa Raghunath, Echai Gurur Karun Charana Vandan, Jaha Vaite Vigna Nash Avishta Puran. Sri Rup Sanatana Bhatta Raghunath, Sri Jiva Gopa Bhatta Dasa Raghunath. Echai Gurur Karan Charana Bandhan.
Echai Gurur Karan Charana Bandhan.
Jaha Hoite Vigna Nash Avishta Puran.
Jaha Hoite Vigna Nash Avishta Puran.
Shirup Sanatan Bhatta Raghunath.
Shirup Sanatan Bhatta Raghunath.
Shri Jiva
Gopala Bhatta Dasa
Raghunath.
Echai Guru Arjuna Charana Bandhan. Jayate Vigyana Savishta Puran.
Sirupa Sanatana Bhatta Raghunath.
Sirupa Sanatana Bhatta Raghunath.
Shri Jiva Gopala Bhatta Dasa Raghunath.
Shri Jiva Gopal Bhatta Dasa Raghunath.
Echai Guru Kari Charana Bandhan.
Echai Guru Karan Charana Bandhan.
Jahaite Vignana Savishta Puran.
Jahaite Vignana Savishta Puran.
Shri Rup Sanatana
Bhatta Raghunath.
Shri Jiva
Gopala Bhatta Dasa
Raghunath.
Echai Guru Kari Charana Bandhan.
Jahaite
Vignana Savishta Puran.
Shri
Rupa Sanatan Bhatta Raghunath.
Shri Jiva Gopala Bhatta Dasa
Raghunath. Echai Guru Karan Charana Bandhan.
Word for word, we won't read the word for word from the first verse, it's obvious.
H.I.
These six.
Gurur.
Of spiritual masters.
Karam.
I offer.
Chadanavandan.
Prayers to the lotus feet.
Jaha
Hoite.
From which?
Vigna Nash,
destruction of all impediments.
Abhishta
Puran,
fulfillment of desires.
I
pray to the lotus feet of the six Goswamis, Sri Rup Sanatana Bhatta Raghunath, Sri Jiva Gopal Bhatta, and Dasa Raghunath, so that all impediments to my writing this literature will be annihilated and my real desire will be fulfilled. If one wants to benefit the entire world, he will certainly find persons like hogs and pigs who will put forward many impediments. That is natural. But if a devotee seeks shelter at the lotus feet of the six Goswamis, the merciful Goswamis will certainly give the Lord's servitor all protection. It is not astonishing that impediments are placed before those who are spreading the Krishna consciousness movement all over the world. Nevertheless, if we adhere to the lotus feet of the six Goswamis and pray for their mercy, all impediments will be annihilated and the transcendental devotional desire to serve the Supreme Lord will be fulfilled. Om Ajnana Timirantasya Gananjana Sadakaya Chakshur Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tathati Shapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Padakamalam, Shri Gurum Vaishnavamsha, Shri Rupam Sagarjatam, Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Stam Sajivam, Sadvaitam Savadhutam, Krishna Sahitam, Krishna Chaitanya Devam, Sri Radha Krishna Padam, Sahagana Dalita. Sri Vishakam Vitamsa. He Krishna Karuna Sindhau Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kamshana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshari Prishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vansha Kodhuru Pyascha Kripa Sindho Pyayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhaktarinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Pangum langayate kailam mukamma vartayech shrutim yat kripata mahangvande krishna chaitanam isharam durgame pati mendhasya skalat padagater muhu swakripa yashti danena santa sant vam Sant Bhavalambanam Shri Rup Sanatana Patta Raghunath Shri Jiva Gopal Patta Dasa Raghunath Echai Gurur Karon Chadana Vandan Jaha Hoite Vignanash Abhishta Puran. Here Srila Kaviraj Goswami is beginning his auspicious invocation for the Antyalila of Chaitanya Charitamrita, offering his respects to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Mukam Kuroti Bhajalam Pangor Langayate, practically the same meaning. Paramananda Madhavam, there's no difference between Paramananda Madhavam and Sri Chaitanya Ishara, they're the same Supreme Personality of Godhead. Durga me pati me andhasya skalat padagater muhu. So Kaviraj Goswami expresses that it's a very difficult task for which he's feels very much unqualified. Durga me pati, a very difficult road, and antasya, I'm like a blind man, and skalatpada gater muhu, and I'm slipping again and again. So I'm dependent on the mercy of the great souls, santa, swa Prapad Yashti Dhanina Santa Santva Balambana. Their mercy, Shakrapa, can be like a stick for me. And blind man who's slipping takes advantage of the stick, and then he can get support and move forward. Without that stick, he would just slip and slide and be in all sorts of difficulty. But he takes advantage of his stick and goes forward nicely. So Kaviraj Goswami says that I depend on the mercy of the great souls, the saintly devotees. On my own, I have no ability to go forward. But by the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the mercy of his devotees, I may be able to finish this task of writing Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. Then he specifically offers his obeisances to the Goshamis, Sri Rup Sanatana Bhatta Raghunath, Sri Jeeva Gopal Bhatta Dasa Raghunath. H.I. Gurur Karun Charana Bandhan. He says that these are my gurus. There are two kinds of guru: Diksha Guru and Shiksha Guru. Kaviraj Goswami was not initiated by the six Goswamis, but he accepts them as his spiritual masters, Shiksha Guru. A devotee can have only one initiating guru, but there's no limit on the number of Shiksha Gurus. So he accepts these six Goswamis as his Shiksha Gurus, and he says, Jaha Haite Vignanash, by their mercy, the obstacles, there are so many obstacles, can be destroyed, and Abhishta Puram, all desires can be fulfilled, especially the desire to complete this work, Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, glorifying Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It's interesting, Srila Prabhupada's gloss on Vignanash, destruction of obstacles. He indicates that the obstacles he chooses to discuss are those offered by other human beings. We know that there are three kinds of miseries: those that come from the body and mind, those that come from material nature, and those that come from other living beings. And among them, the human beings are perhaps the most obnoxious. Jonathan Swift described them as the most pernicious race of odious little vermin nature ever suffered to crawl on the face of the earth. Well put, I think. The human beings, Prabhupada also quoted Chanakya Pandit, that a human being may be envious and a serpent may be envious, but a serpent you can pacify by mantras, and an envious human being is impossible. Krura. Krura means cruel and envious. What is that? Sarpa Krura. I've forgotten the verse, but he's quoted many times. So sometimes they're compared to serpents, or here's Srila Prabhupada compares them to hogs and pigs. Hogs and pigs will put forward many impediments. One time, Srila Prabhupada said, he was sitting on his balcony, he said, anything good that you want to do, he said, there will be so many difficulties. And especially difficulties offered by envious persons. By government officers, by materialistic, opportunistic persons, or by those who are simply envious. So many impediments can be offered, and it's very difficult, especially to deal with these human beings who just want to put obstacles in the path of anything good that you want to do to spread Krishna consciousness for the benefit of others. When Srila Prabhupada had that practical experience of enemies or materialistically influenced people who wanted to impede his work of spreading the Krishna consciousness movement. But Srila Prabhupada indicates that if we take shelter of the lotus feet of the six Goswamis, then they will give all protection. They'll give all protection. Just as a child takes shelter of the parents, a devotee takes shelter of the spiritual master, the initiating spiritual master, or instructing spiritual masters, and gets the protection of Krishna consciousness received by the mercy of the Lord, then everything becomes possible. As he expresses, the blind man can cross mountains, or the blind man, yes, can cross over a mountain, or a lame man can cross over a mountain, and a man who can't speak can recite Vedic literature. It all becomes possible by the wonderful mercy of the six Goswamis or their representatives. And annihilation of obstacles, and when the obstacles are annihilated, abhishtapura, then all desires will be fulfilled. Materialists have so many desires to be fulfilled. They're ashapachashatapata kamakrodopara. They have thousands and thousands of desires. But a devotee has the desire to serve Krishna. He also has desires. Krishna consciousness doesn't mean to annihilate desires. The Buddhist philosophy is to annihilate desires. Or the impersonalist Advaita philosophy, which Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said is essentially covered Buddhism, has the same idea. Because their idea is that the world is full of suffering. And what is the cause of suffering? The cause of suffering is ignorance and desire. Because of our ignorance and our desires, we're suffering. Which is right. We have these ignorant desires which are causing us so much trouble. We desire gambling, intoxication, meat eating, illicit sex. And we desire to enjoy this material world. This is due to ignorance of our constitutional position. And on account of that ignorance and desire, we suffer. So that Lord Buddha taught then that there can be cessation of suffering. How can you get free from suffering? By getting free from desire. His idea is that desire stems from consciousness. consciousness, the mind and body, there's a whole chain in Buddhist thought in what they call dependent origination. Everything depends on everything else. So that consciousness comes from impressions. From impressions come desire. From desire comes attachment. From attachment comes the consciousness that brings us to birth and to repeated birth. From repeated birth, again we get ignorance and desire, and so it goes on again and again. So his idea is not just get free from desire, but get free from all of these things. From desire, from ignorance, from the senses, from the body, from consciousness, from everything. And then you have no more problem. But that process of getting free from everything is self-destructive. It's nihilistic. That essentially, I have no more desires because I no longer exist. And because I no longer exist and no longer have any desires, I no longer have any suffering. So it's something like throwing the baby out with the bathwater. We get free from suffering by sacrificing our individual existence. So that process, first of all, it ends up in either a void or something that's no better than a void. It's something you, if the truth has no form, no qualities, no name, no this, no that, practically you wind up with not much difference from that and void. So the first thing is that the goal is not very wonderful, not very splendid. And the second thing is that it's very difficult to attain. Lord Buddha's path of seeking cessation of material existence is an eightfold path of right action, right speech, right meditation, right everything right. Essentially a set of moral guidelines and some guidelines for right meditation or right thought. But it's very difficult. First of all, just simply right living, especially ahimsa, don't kill the animals. There's so many Buddhists, and where is their right living? Killing animals, doing so many things. I met one, anyway, that's a story. There's so many Buddhists doing so much rubbish. But especially right thought, to think of something impersonal or void is very, very difficult. It's very, very difficult. So the process is uncertain. The goal is hopeless, or is a goal conceived from hopelessness and frustration. It's a negative goal. Our goal is nothingness. Or our goal is oneness with the Supreme, in which we become essentially dissolved. So again, nothingness. And the process is dubious. The process is very arduous and uncertain. To try to reach no thought in Buddhism is very difficult business, because you'll think about having no thought, you'll desire to have no desire, and so on. So it's very very much theoretical, and even what you reach in theory is disappointing. But in the devotional service of the Lord, there's desire, to satisfy the senses of your Lord in one's personal individual identity. So rather than trying to snuff out desires, one seeks to purify desires, to engage one's desires in their natural, pure way for pleasing Krishna. One seeks to revive those spiritual desires. That's possible. Desire is there. It can be purified. It can be purified by this kirtan, hari kirtan. The mind becomes purified, the heart becomes purified, shades of dark in the margin. And so one can think of Krishna, one can desire to please Krishna in so many ways. One can act on those desires. Any desire that you have in the impersonal process, where does it go finally? But the desire to satisfy the Lord goes to the eternal platform. Even if I have some desire for realization, impersonal realization, so the desire is temporary and then I attain realization and I merge or become zero. So the desire is a temporary thing. But on the transcendental platform, there's eternal desire. The living entity is real. He existed in the past, he exists at present, and in the future he'll never cease to exist. But his desires change in Krishna consciousness. He desires to please the Lord. And those desires can be fulfilled. The material desires, asha, pasha, shatayar, badha, kama, krodha, parayana, they're desires that can never be fulfilled. So the materialists are ultimately frustrated. They have desire after desire, and the desires are dushpura, dushpurena analena cha. Desires that burn the heart and will never be satisfied, no matter what. The more we try to satisfy material desires, the more they grow. It's like trying to extinguish a fire by pouring gasoline on it. The fire grows larger, it doesn't go out. So the material desires could never be extinguished. The desire for impersonal liberation leads nowhere or as good as nowhere. But the desire to please the Lord leads to complete fulfillment. Abhishta Puran. One's real desires can be fulfilled by the mercy of the Lord and by the mercy of the Lord's devotees. One can be resituated in one's eternal position and render substantial service to the Lord. Kaviraj Goswami had many impediments. He was old, he was arthritic, and very difficult in such a situation to write such a great book, and yet he was able to do so by completely depending on the mercy of Guru and Gauranga. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions? Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you for a nice class. You were speaking about impersonalist and personal realization, and I read in the second chapter of Srimad Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada explains that the impersonal philosophy is useful for the living entity up until the point he meets a pure devotee of the Lord. So I was wondering if one can actually become a personalist if he doesn't find someone he considers to be a pure devotee. Can he become a personalist, or does he maintain or remain?
Can he become a personalist without the mercy of a pure devotee? In theory, but if he's very intelligent, Ganavan, he may conclude that what is this impersonal thing? It must be person. He may come that way. That's a long process, the process of figuring things out by oneself. But even if he comes to that point, then now what? So he needs a practical process for engagement in the service of the Lord. So, in theory, all right. But why do it that way? Just like a person, he may become an expert physicist just on his own, by intelligence and by reading books, by this, that, one out of a million. He may become a very good physicist, or he may win the Nobel Prize, even without attending university. But that's not the process. That's extraordinary. But why try to take the extraordinary method? Why not take the straightforward approach?
Can I ask a question that leads on from that?
Mm-hmm.
And if one is not pure, then how can he see someone who is pure? How can he choose someone who is pure if one is not?
By good fortune. By good fortune. If we're not fully qualified, then we can't depend on being fully qualified. So then, how does it happen? By good fortune. If we're, you go to someone who's not a legitimate devotee or not a devotee at all, that's due to our misfortune. And if we come in touch with a devotee, that's our good fortune. So the business of the Krishna consciousness movement is to make unfortunate people fortunate, to give people the opportunity to come in touch with pure devotees of the Lord. Shreya Kwadeva Chandrika Vitaya, to spread good fortune. Yes?
Does good fortune come from your karma, your past activities, or?
Well, does good karma come from your past activities? Of course, if you render devotional service, then you have a standing credit of good fortune. We see someone comes to the Krishna consciousness movement right away, very eager to serve and very attracted to hearing and chanting and so on. So that's evidence of previous good fortune. Svalpam apyasya nehavikramanashosti pratyavaranavidyate. Whatever progress you make is your permanent credit. So it carries over to the next life. And one is automatically attracted. Avasha, automatically attracted to Krishna consciousness. And that's one kind of good fortune. Another kind of good fortune. One time Srila Prabhupada was asked by devotees in Mayapur, devotees said that only a fortunate person comes to Krishna consciousness. So how have we come? With our background of sinful, Prabhupada said, I've created your good fortune. That's called causeless mercy. It's not due to anything that you did, it's just good fortune created for you. Prabhupada gave the example that somebody takes a bag of money and says, here, take it. What did you do to deserve it? But he just pushed it, here, take it. So the pure devotees of the Lord create good fortune, despite, not because of our past activities, but in spite of them.
On your point about devotional service and our desire to serve Krishna can be fulfilled, as far as I understand, anything related to Krishna is ever expansive. So can our desire to serve Krishna ever be fulfilled?
Can our desire, because everything is all expansive, can it be fulfilled? Yes. There's two kinds of expanding. There's expanding because of frustration and expanding because of satisfaction. The material desires, we get what we desire and then it's frustrated, and so we want something else or something more. So the desires expand because of frustration, dissatisfaction. And on the spiritual platform, the desires are satisfied and being satisfied in Krishna consciousness, one expands in further desire. It's not due to frustration, it's due to inspiration. Yes?
So on that point, but then we have Mahaprabhu's quoting Shikshastaka, you know, he's unfortunately has no attraction for them, so it seems as if then that's a contradiction, that it's there, but he hasn't got the satisfaction, he hasn't got. So what is that mean? What is that?
And he's expressing lack of Krishna consciousness. That means that we're not satisfied because we're not attracted to Krishna. Of course, on the spiritual platform, that sense of being dissatisfied is identical with satisfaction. In the material world, there's duality. There's satisfaction and there's dissatisfaction. On the spiritual platform, dissatisfaction gives even greater satisfaction than satisfaction does.
I'm an anti-smoking campaigner.
Excuse me?
I'm an anti-smoking campaigner.
An anti-smoking campaigner, okay.
Yesterday I stood on a soapbox outside the High Court,
mm-hmm.
having been on a placard and receiving criticism and all the rest of it. And this argument is cropping up all the time. With our present situation of economic collapse,
mm-hmm.
and global climate change and all the rest of it, there's two options. Either you eliminate a large proportion of the world's population, not going to be able to go around, or everybody starts living a simple lifestyle, you know, become vegetarian, and then there's enough for everybody. But I'm concerned that a lot of people think that we need to get rid of a lot of people. It's a bit of a nightmare, basically.
Well, I agree we need to get rid of a lot of people. Especially those people. Anyway, it's not up to us to get rid of a lot of people. Nature gets rid of a lot of people every day. Especially your opponents in the pro-smoking department. They're recruiting candidates for being eliminated from the face of the earth. But the Krishna consciousness movement is the most effective means for bringing about a more natural way of life, because it's based on our real nature. Even if I build up a natural way of life for sense gratification, that's unnatural. I may live off the land and use everything comes from the land itself and shun chemicals and shun machines and so on. But if I don't revive my relationship with God, then the whole project ends in futility. I live a natural way of life and then I come back again to take birth again and live an unnatural way of life again. But to go through birth and death is itself unnatural for the eternal human being. Just as it's unnatural, say, to wear clothes made of synthetic materials and to be smoking weeds and drinking fermented, rotten stuff and fertilizing the land with poisons and so on, just as that's unnatural. It's unnatural to go through the process of birth and death. It's not our nature. We're eternal by nature. And so the process of dying, getting old and dying, and then taking birth again, and getting old and diseased and dying again, is foreign to us. It's unnatural to us. But we're going through that process because we've forgotten our eternal nature and our eternal relationship with Krishna. So that real natural life means to return to our natural consciousness, that I'm an eternal living being, I'm a servant of God or Krishna. And when I do that, then automatically I put aside the unnatural things. I don't want to smoke and drink and do so many things because I understand that life is not meant for sense gratification. Life is not meant for accumulating. Life is not meant for exploiting and competing for material enjoyment. Life is meant for service to God, service to Krishna. So when a person becomes Krishna conscious, there's a vegetarian society, there are anti-smoking lobbies, there are temperance societies. So someone may give up alcohol but still smoke, or he may give up smoking and alcohol but still eat animal flesh, or he may give up animal flesh and still smoke or drink, or he may be kind to animals like cats and dogs but still eat the flesh of other animals. So all of these problems are there. We solve one problem and the next problem is still there. We get rid of one unnatural feature of material life and some other unnatural feature takes its place. But when one becomes Krishna conscious, then he's naturally attracted to a simple life of high thinking. And finally, he gets out of the material world. From that point of view, we want to get rid of everyone. We want to get the whole population and export them all, send them all out of this material world and back to the spiritual world where everyone belongs. Yes?
I think my fear and concern is that governments will embark on mass genocide.
Governments will, your fear is that governments will embark on mass genocide. Well, there's no need of future tense. Governments are already engaged in mass genocide under different pleas like war on terror and so on. They're engaged in various... Well, we don't do ethnic cleansing anymore. We have wars on terror. But the civilian death toll, by the most conservative estimates, in Iraq are about 100,000. And those are exceedingly conservative estimates. The less conservative ones are about 1.5 million. So governments that we know and love are engaged in such really genocidal activities already. It's going, why? It's mass exploitation. You know, I exploit you and you exploit the next guy. That's small-scale exploitation. For big-scale exploitation, you really want to have a government. Because governments can use military force. Governments can claim legitimacy for their atrocious behavior. So governments are doing these things all the time. It's nothing new. And, you know, which is easier to stop, the tobacco companies or government? They're both difficult. They're both working hand in glove, of course. But therefore, the material world can never be set straight. It's something like trying to straighten the tail of a dog. You know, you straighten its tail and it goes, and you straighten it again and goes, so trying to set the material world right is something like that. It's a hopeless task. The hopeful task is to get out of the material world and help others get out of the material world to the spiritual world where everything is constitutionally right. Here it's constitutionally wrong.
But if we do God's will, everything come right?
Yeah. If you do God's will, everything becomes right. But then you get out of the material world. God's will is, just like what's the government's will if it's a good government? If there are prisoners, it wants them to reform and get free. It doesn't desire to stay there forever. Get out. And government's not trying to encourage the prisoners, make it a nice prison and stay there and be comfortable. Come out. So doing right means putting ourselves in Krishna consciousness so that ultimately we get out of this material world altogether. And help others get it. Okay. Yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to understand the
Cause of material desire.
Lack of
association. Probably called, well, the root is causeless unwillingness to serve Krishna. Causeless unwillingness. It's when we turn away from Krishna, we naturally have desires, and our desires are naturally fulfilled in relationship with Krishna. When you turn away from Krishna, your desires will still be there, but they'll be perverted desires and impossible to fulfill. That's the nature of material desire. Louder, please.
At times, due to illusion, these desires, they appear as if, you know, service to Krishna or like that.
Yeah, material desire can masquerade as service to Krishna. That's a fact. Therefore, one has to be purified so that this false desire, you know, it's like weeds growing up and you're watering the plants, but the weeds are growing also. So you want to carefully purify the heart by chanting and avoiding 10 offenses so that the weeds don't grow along with the plants that you want.
The next question is: it's mentioned that we need to take shelter of the devotees to get rid, to come out of this situation, and we should feel dependency. But somehow, you know, due to ego, I don't feel that dependency on them. So how do I think?
Well, then you have a big need, don't you? If because of false ego we don't feel dependent, then we really have a problem. So then we really have to approaching the Goshana. What does it mean to depend on the mercy of the devotees? Especially it means their instructions. Sri Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, Goswamis have given so many books of instruction to guide us in Krishna consciousness. Well, they tell us what to do if you don't have desire, if your false ego is getting the better of you, what to do. So for that we have this literature, Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, Kaviraj Goswami. Srila Prabhupada has given us so many books, and other devotees are translating books to give us the, all right, now what do I do? So if we take shelter of these books, read them, discuss them, study them, distribute them.
Buddha is one of the incarnations of Lord Vishnu. But like, why is there so many contradictions in Buddhism and opposite consciousness?
If Buddha is a incarnation of Lord Vishnu, why are there so many contradictions between Buddhism and Lord Vishnu and Krishna consciousness? Because Buddha is a tricky incarnation of Vishnu. Sammohaya Suradvishana. He comes to bewilder the atheists by teaching an atheistic philosophy. But in the course of that atheistic philosophy, he gives them the opportunity to begin the path of faith and proper conduct. You'll remember that one of Buddha's items on the Eightfold Noble Path is right action. Oh, especially that means ahimsa, nonviolence. The people of his time were so much engaged in killing animals needlessly and rationalizing it by saying, oh, this is in the Vedas, I'm doing a Vedic yajna. So Lord Buddha rejected the Vedas and said, don't forget these Vedas, follow the Eightfold Noble Path. But what is that noble path? It begins with nonviolence. So he, plus people wind up, when you know, there's all this philosophical Buddhism, but Buddhism in action most often means that people are devoted to Buddha. So they begin path of devotional service, begin following regulated principles, and trying to give up material absorption. So he start giving them a start.
It's like after that becomes the person consciousness.
Mm, that's the idea. If you get stuck in Buddhism, you're stuck. So we have to preach to the Buddhists, don't remain stuck. Mm-hmm.
I understand there's a line of Buddhism where they actually say that you become Buddha also. So
yeah, there are different ideas about becoming Buddha. I'm not a Buddhist scholar, and we're pretty soon going to get over my head, but in different schools of Buddhism, some say there's only one Buddha, Gautama Buddha, who gave us this philosophy. And then in other schools of Buddhism, you can also become Buddha. Buddha means enlightened. You can also become an enlightened person like Buddha. They have that idea. And there are different ramifications of that according to their ideas.
Would that be impersonalism almost?
Not almost, definitely.
Yeah.
The Buddhist philosophy is ultimately atheistic. There's no God. There's not even a soul. Anatma. You shouldn't be attached to this idea that there's a soul or that you're a soul. That's just going to keep you in material existence because it's imagining this really ego. It's some sort of identity. Okay, I'm a soul. There is no soul. That's Buddhist idea. So it's really radical. And it's weird also because, okay, I don't exist. I don't have a permanent existence. I'm just sort of an agglomeration of, what do they call them? Well, an aggregate of forces. There's a mind and body that have come together with desire and other things, and they create like a picture of individuality. And then the next moment, they're configured differently, and there's another picture of individuality. And the next moment, So there's no real you. There's just a moment by moment flow of a combination of body and mind and desire and impressions and consciousness and this and that. Okay, that's their idea. So there's no permanent self. Then the question is, therefore they don't have the idea of transmigration, that we leave one body and move to the next body, because there's no you to move from one body to the next. And yet there is reincarnation or a rebirth in their philosophy. But rebirth is just sort of this aggregate of forces causes that aggregate of forces. But it's really strange because I'm not that aggregate of forces, I'm this aggregate of forces. Why does this aggregate of forces have to suffer for what that aggregate of forces did? It's problematic.
Does it mean that we shouldn't worship Lord Buddha as Vishnu?
Should we not worship Lord Vishnu, Lord Buddha as Vishnu? Yeah, we respect Lord Buddha as Vishnu. Of course we worship Vishnu, that's the first thing. Krishna is the original Vishnu, so we're worshipping Krishna. By worshipping Krishna, we're worshipping everyone. Bhuta, Kalki, Matsya, Kurma, Narayan, everybody. All the incarnations of Vishnu are included in Krishna. But apart from that, we're recognizing Buddha as Krishna's incarnation. The way you worship Lord Buddha is by rejecting his philosophy. Anything else? Okay, thank you all very much. Hare Krishna, all glories to you.
Sorry, Mr. Jagat, Swami Maharaj, Ki
Jai.
Bhagavad Ki Jai. Samadeva Pata 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 Ki Jai.